So, we're now recording, and it's 2:45 in the afternoon of May the 15th, 2015, yeah. And I'm with Bob Copeland at his house in Grange, and Bob's very kindly agreed to talk to us again, and this time we're going to ask Bob to tell us about the job that he spent most of his life doing. He was a postman.
31 years,
okay. So he was a postman, or he worked for the post office, and a lot of his time was spent, some of his time was spent delivering the post in Cartmel. But Bob, just to start with, how did you happen to get the job in the first place?
Well, in the first place, you see, I was working in the shipyard. See, jobs were hard to come by when I came out of the army, and the first job I got was putting up the race course at Cartmel Race Course. You see, it was only one day racing in those days, Whitlundy, and they put it all up, and then after the race days, everybody took it all down again. And so what happened then was, when took it all down again, there was where was I going to work? And this is, I'd come out of the army after 7 years, 6 years, 228 days actually. So it was nearly 7 years.
And how did that lead to a job at the post office?
And so what happened then was Unsworth at Cartmel, this is all the Unsworths that are there now, it was their granddad, he had got a taxi.
So which Unsworth was that, Bob?
The Unsworths that are there now, all the ones that are at Cartmel now, it was their granddad.
But what was his name, do you remember?
Ernie Unsworth.
Ernie Unsworth,
you
okay.
See, and what happened was, he already had a taxi, and the first garage he had, you know where the village hall is at Cartmel? Well, as you turn the corner to go in the village hall, there's an oak tree there, isn't there? Right before you go in the gate, that oak tree was there then. But there was no village hall, because I remember that being built. And I remember the people who worked on it and everything. And he had a big wooden garage there. And so then, of course, he decided to move to where Bob's hairdressers are now, and he even had petrol pumps in there, you see. And of course, all his business with the EC and God knows what, they wouldn't allow petrol pumps near the roadside, would they?
So
that was it. And of course, what he did then was, there was rationing on at the time, and of course, as regards coal and things like that, and everybody was crying out for fuel. And so what he did, he bought a lot of wood out Rusland way. It was on a steep slope. It was really bad, was it? And it was what you call 35-year-old coppice. See, that coppice used to be cut round about 30 years and used to be taken up to Spark Bridge to make bobbins. Cotton bobbins, but of course later on, see, cotton bobbins went over onto plastic, didn't they?
Yeah.
You see, anyway, so he bought this, and of course he engaged a few men to go and cut it. There was no chainsaws in those days. It was all axe work, and believe you me, it was really tough work, I'll tell you. And of course, we used to drag this stuff with just the Fortson tractor down the rides to the wood wall, and then connect the Fortson tractor up to the saw bench and saw them out in logs. And then, you know, when you have a wheelbarrow and you put a sort of a thing round the top of the wheelbarrow when you're getting leaves to get more in, well, he did that with his lorry. And I believe he put 3-ton springs on. It was a 3-ton lorry, and he put 6-ton springs on, I believe. I'm not sure about that. And of course, he loaded his logs up. And one of the lads was a permanent, just driving it to Blackpool and Preston, flogging all these logs.
Anyway, coming back to Cartmel, though, Bob.
Yes, I'm getting round to that eventually.
Are you?
So he made a pair of... He made quite a bit of money on that, you see. Well, then, of course, I'd got married, of course, when I just come out of the army. And so then what happened was, my wife was expecting, and my mother had bought that place there, that Bluebell house, because we lived across the road in Ecourt. And, of course, when my wife was expecting, she said, I'm not having any babies here. I thought, charming, your own ruddy son and all, you know. Thought, right, I'm getting the hell out of this. So I went to Barrow, where my wife come from, and her mother had died, you know, just maybe about 12 months before, with cancer. And so I lived in the sitting room and I got a job in the shipyard, working on the boats all the time, on the ships.
So was this about 1946, after the war?
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course it was. And so what happened was then, I was working in the plumbing department and I really enjoyed that job. It was really good because I wasn't in the shops at all. I was on the ships all the time. I remember being on there were all the strand boats anyway. It had been a troop ship that was going back to a passenger. And then we did two brand new ships for the Elder Dempster Line, the South African Line. They were about 18,000 tonners. And funny enough, I met someone in Grange who'd even gone out on that when he was on call up, you know, the 12, no, 2 years that they didn't they? And he said, I went on that one of those ships. I said, when I named it, I said, one was called the Papa, and the other was called the Papa, what was the rim? He knew it was mad about it. And so while I was there, I was there about 18 months or more, and I said to my mate, I said, he was a plumber, I was only the plumber's mate. I said, you know, I said, I love this job, I said, but I said, I'm afraid it's a dead end, he said. I said, I could be here with you, I said, till I'm 65. And I said, what is at the end of it? I said, as I will say, thank you very much, shake hands with you, I said, and that's it. He said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to apply to get in the post office. So I wrote, and my stepfather, who was already on the post office, but I didn't ask him to at all. I just did it on my own bat. I wrote for as if it was a vacancy. And of course, they told me to come through. And I gave an interview.
Where, here in Grange?
In Grange, yeah.
Yeah. Was the post office then where it is now?
No, the post office was down Main Street then, where it's a estate agent now. Underneath it was all the sorting offices, quite a big cellar in that there. Next to the bookshop it is now, isn't it?
It is now, yeah. Yes.
And of course the new post office, my brother-in-law, who married my wife's sister, he was a stonemason and he worked on that new post office. He's dead and gone now, of course. Yeah.
So you applied for a job?
And I came through and I had to sit an exam there. They had to do writing and arithmetic, I think it was. Writing and arithmetic and I don't know whether there was anything else. I can't remember now. But anyway, that's it. So I got the job. And that's how I started.
Okay. And at what point did you start going over to Cartmel to deliver over there?
Oh, that was a long while after, you see, because... You see, I was what you call either on a walking round. You see, 1 week you do a walking round, another week you do a bike round. You see, and then after being there 2 or 3 years, they said, well, can you drive? But I didn't have a driving licence. Well, I learned to drive, actually, when I worked at Merlewood before I went in the war. The man who owned Merlewood, I got a provisional licence and just went down the drive and back again. So I'd had hold of a car and a rough idea. I remember it was a 20-horse standard it was. I remember it was a nice chap to be in. Of course, then when I went to the army, of course, in the desert, I had loads of chance to drive, see. Albion, big Albion lorries and all sorts, you see. There was nothing to get me away in the middle of the Western desert, was there?
Anyway, back to Cartmel again.
So what happened then, of course, got in the port office and... It was just on the walking round 1 week and the bike round the next and the walking round the bit. And then, of course, they said, right, you can have driving lessons with the post office driver, post office man to do you. And so for 1 week after that, you see, they came off that and they just took me out driving, teaching me to drive, you see, which I mean, I already knew. And, of course, after that, of course, then they didn't go to any civilian ones. They just passed you out, you see. It's a piece of cake it was.
So what, they gave you a licence?
Yeah, of course they were. Well, because they had their own people, you see, the post office.
So there wasn't a central agency that's...
Go to, no.
No, okay. No.
And so then after that, of course, it was either a walking round, a bike round, or a van round, you see. And of course you did Cartmel one, and another time you did Beckside, which was all the outer on a push bike, and then another bike round, you see, that's what we did.
So if you were doing Cartmel, you'd start off from Grange on your bike, would you?
No, I was on a van then.
Okay, so you'd have the van and you'd drive over to Cartmel.
Yeah.
And you'd park somewhere.
We used to start off. The pit all the one down the Hags was on the bike round. He used to start at Cart Lane there.
So who was this?
Well, one of the other horsemen, you see. Yeah. And he'd work up that way to there, and they would call it Riggs, and then High Fell, and then all those places going down there as far as Pit Farm. And, of course, then you started on Cartmel Round. You see, before that, before we had that, they used to just have what you call an auxiliary person doing Cartmel Round, because there was a woman who used to do it, and then a fella did it, something, you know. It's a part-time job it was, you see, in those days. And then, of course, when they incorporated, they did away with them when we were the vans, of course. And, of course, you started off by those new... See, those bungalows, I remember all those bungalows being built there on the right-hand side. You see, when all it was there was just the stream coming from the town there. That was a field all there. See, they're very going to take over that ring where they do the walking round, aren't they? They're going to build houses on that, aren't they, I believe?
The permission's been granted, yes. Yeah.
And of course, the police station was on the left-hand side, and all those new ones were built, of course, and the police station was there, of course.
Police station was where?
Police station was there, just there's 72 houses there, and then next to that is the two old houses. Well, one of them used to be lived in, he was the caretaker to do the little church there, what do you call them?
Not Methodist, yes, I know the one you mean.
No, they're not, they're Quakers.
Quakers, yeah.
You see,
Thank you.
That went with the job, you see, in one of the little cottages, and the other one was let to whoever they let it to. And of course, they built a bit on the end of the police station as well. And right opposite there, as these bungalows were built, there was another bungalow was built, and it was called Cartmel Weavers. They had a big shed. They used to do weaving in there, you see. And then next to that, there's another two bungalows. Well, one is the local... it's the nursery now. Not nursery,
the doctor's surgery.
Doctor's surgery, you see.
Yeah.
Well, one of the local policemen here from Grange, he got married, and he had that built there. That used to be all wet, all that corner there. It was always wet. And that in that corner where all those other bungalows are, behind Maggie Puddle Cottage, that was all a wet corner. It was always really wet there, you know. Mm. They must have really sort of done it with...
Must have drained it properly.
Drained it all properly,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the row of houses, well, they weren't there, those council houses. They weren't there at all, no.
So
just the one jutting out, of course. That belongs to Pit Farm, that one.
So when you started your round, if you were doing the Cartmel round, where would you start delivering?
I've just told you, those houses.
So those were the houses where you'd start?
Yeah.
And can you just walk me through the village, so to speak? Tell me what your round was, where it would take you.
Well, you just go around as you got there, and then along, because the school wasn't even there. There was a row of houses on the other side, because they knocked them all down. It was called Gladstone Terrace, that was.
So you didn't have a set route that you followed every day?
Oh, yes, of course you did. You went right around there and up Ballyhwaite Road and Cark Road, and then came to Edwards Cross and came in that way, you see, into the village.
Right, and then through the village?
Yeah, through the village.
Then
right,
where?
Right around the village. Well, you came up Ainsham Road and down Priest Lane, along Bangarth, and then round into the village and did the square and everything, and County Street. And then of course, we had outlying places. You had to go down to the gamekeeper's cottage, where it's all derelict now, in 7 acres, isn't it, there? We had to go there. And then we had to go that other one, the ones that do through the plantation, there's a man does a, I think there's some salmon and...
Cartmel Game, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That was the limit.
Okay.
That we went to, you see. Well, originally, you see, that used to be on a bike round, that all that bit. You see?
So you had a canvas bag, did you, with all the mail in?
No, you had the mail in the van. You didn't have the bag on your back. You just took your bundle of letters out with you as you went.
So you just literally held everything in your hands, did
That's
you,
right,
as you were
yeah,
walking
yeah,
around?
Yeah.
Okay.
You had your bag on the side of you, of course. And as you reached each area, you just took that bundle out. And you used to use string. Not, it was all string. It wasn't rubber bands like they have now. Everything was tied, everything.
And I think you once told me, Bob, the first time we met,
yeah,
that... You sometimes, if you can't get to sleep at night, you're still in your mind. You go through your routes and you remember delivering to everybody.
Oh well, I just did that just for something to do, you know. all the names of the people. I mean, this is donkey's years after I did that, you know.
But this is what we're interested to know. So could you do that for me now? Could you just mentally walk through the village and say who lived where?
Well, I could do quite a few.
So, Bob, sorry.
Go further along still.
Let's just start again. When you're coming down Hyde's Lane into the village, you were telling us who lived where and what their names were.
Can you not go any further?
So, yes, Bob, sorry, if you don't mind, just tell us again from the left-hand
side. Have you switched
on, then? Yep, we're recording again.
Well, started off at John Shaw's and there was Block there. I don't know the names of the people there now. I've forgotten. I've been left the post every 30-odd years. There was Mrs. Burrows. I know she's there in one of them. Actually, those two houses were what you call agricultural houses. Because and next door, they were actually built for people who worked in farms and things like that.
What were agricultural houses, Bob?
Well, you had to work in agriculture or connected with the agriculture. And the one next door, the people there now, because he's a builder, because I've been waiting ages and ages to get the corner of my house done, but he's never showed up. And then next door was Roger Shaw. I wanted to tell you all about him, but anyway, I'll tell you about him later on. He did work, but he didn't work on a farm. He worked for Crosdales, amongst the heavy timber, and they're the people who do all this playground stuff now, you know, all over. There's stuff goes abroad, it does. Swings and things like that in playgrounds, you know. That name, I think the people who... They carry the name on, of course. But anyway, it's in a big way now. At Haverthwaite, there it is. And then, of course, after that was the police station. Well, there used to be two policemen, of course, because it was two semi-detached houses, and then later on, one used to sort of operate into Grangier, but the other one, the main one, was the Cartmel one, and they built a sort of a little office on the end of it. And then later on, of course, it all went defunct, and they sold it. And the local policeman, the lad that was there, he bought it, and knocked the police side down, the office down. And then he, believe it or not, he had it rebuilt his own side. And then, and he must have already built the next door, and he knocked that down and had that rebuilt as well. So he did all right for himself. I mean, it cost him a lot of money. Anyway, next to that is two old cottages, and one's Jimmy Thompson, who went to school with me. He worked at Glaxo, did Jimmy. He did all right in the Air Force, because I remember seeing him with his wife one day, and he'd got to what you call either Class 1 or Class 2 in the Air Force. That means with above a Sergeant Major. I don't know what it is in the Air Force. It's, I think they call them warrant officers. It was either Class 1 or Class 2. And they wear the coat of arms on their ears, see? And I don't know if it was an observer what it was, because they're a really important job as an observer, you know. They're as important as a pilot, you know, on the bombers. And, I mean, if the observer doesn't know his job, I mean, the pilot can't take him there, can he? And I said to Jim, I said, why the hell did you come out of the Air Force, Jim? Oh, he said, I was glad to get out. I said, when you think of the money that you must have been getting in that job. He said, I was well paid. And I said, well, you bar me. Because I said, I know what happened. You see, all people who stayed on in the forces, whatever rank they had, this is to save money, the government, they reduced them down one rank. You see, if you were a staff sergeant, they just made you into a sergeant. Or if you were a sergeant, they made you into a corporal. See, well, they were saving money by doing that, you see. Well, that's what happened, and he said, oh, I was glad to get out, you know. I remember seeing him. Anyway.
Who was next door to him?
Well, it was somebody called Phillips. They were a well-known family here in Grange. They're quite a long while. And then after that, they say Jimmy must have looked after the Quakers' church, because... I think that partly went with the job of sort of living in a little cottage, you see. Anyway, he's living here at Grange now, as a matter of fact. So I don't know who's got the job. And then, of course, you come along after that, and there's a row of houses, they're all brand new. They weren't then there, of course, till later on.
So when would they have been built?
Oh, a long while after. I think there were 4 or 5 houses there, there is. But the little old cottage on the other side is called Maggie Puddle Cottage. It's a funny name, that is. Well, behind there, there's a lot of bungalows been built. And it was always very wet in that bottom, because originally there it was all a... You see, in those days there was what you call, people used to go in for keeping hens. It was a big hen farm, it was. That now is the dining room for the elementary school is built on that ground in there, isn't it? The dining hall for yes. the elementary school. You know what I'm on about, don't you?
The primary school, we call it.
Primary school, yes, yeah. The elementary school.
Yeah.
Well, that's on that side. Well, that, all that area was Gaskers, a firm, people called Gaskers here. They were quite a big family, they were. And they practically ran the cricket team in Carton as well, that family. Anyway, after...
And they had a chicken farm there, did they?
No, one of the sons did, you know, not just one, not the other ones. They were a painting and plumbing outfit, and they had their places. You know where that row of shops in Grange is, on Windermere Road, that row of shops there? Well, they were just all garages there, and they had it as a paint shop and different things like that. And, of course, so someone came along and bought the lot and made all those shops there, of course. But anyway, after those, there was the one that sticks out. That's a little old cottage right against where the beck is. And it was... it belonged to Pitt Farm, and of course, whoever was in that, of course, it was a farm man at Pitt Farm. And it wasn't a racing stable, as it is now, as you know. But, one of my uncles, my great uncle, he lived on the other side of the road. There's 3 houses there. One's called Bridge Cottage, that's the one he had. And then on the next to it was a little tiny house next to it. I think it was some people called Isles. And then I can't remember who lived in the end one. It was quite a big one, that one. They had a big garage built on that there. And I know my uncle, like it was, Uncle Isaac, he used to have... And his wife was a funny old woman, she was. She had specks on the end of her nose, and they were all tied up with cotton. And they used to have a milk round, which they used to go to Pitt Farm at night time with this kit, big kit on iron wheels with a brass tap. And they used to go around the village at night time, knocking on people's doors, the customers. And of course, you used to go to the door with your jug, and you either had a quart or a pint, you see. And that's how they must have saved the money, because, as I say, he just used to do bits of little gardening jobs. In fact, he did bits of jobs on the post office, just temporarily, you know. And I always remember when he bought the place. And then when it came, when all the earth lavatories, they had to be turned over to water lavatories. Of course, everybody had to do it. And, of course, to save money, of course, he didn't have ready money to get big builders in to do it. I remember him doing it. I remember him at the little old top of the garden, the toilet, him digging the trench all the way down the garden and out to the road and putting the pipes in himself, he did. But then, of course, then he had to get the proper people to connect it to the mains. You couldn't do that yourself, you see. Yes, he must have been a really hard-working fellow. I always remember him doing that.
Anyway, carry on your round.
Round the corner, we went... And where the school is, that was just a field then, of course. But the other side of the road, there was a row of houses called Gladstone Terrace. And, of course, they must have thought they looked shabby or something, but they knocked them all down.
But where was that? Opposite the
right
school?
Right opposite the school, yes. There was a row of houses. There was Pickles lived in one, and Boundies lived in one, and Barnes, people called Barnes, lived in that one, in the middle one, I think.
Is that where it's an open field today?
Yes, it's all open there now, yeah.
Oh, so there used to be houses built there?
Around there, yes, they're all there.
Right.
Okay. And then we went along, of course, up Alleyway Road.
Yeah.
And the first one to have it built, there's a bungalow, of course, first. A man who has a station garage, it was his parents who had that built. But it wasn't there, it was built later on. But the first semi-detached house, the man who had that built, he was a joiner by trade. And what happened, how he come to build that house was, he'd actually, before that, he'd lived in where the sticky toffee pudding is now in the main square. That was the post office. And there was a flat below it, above it, and you went down the side of the road where you go onto the park, and that was the way into the flat. And they just, I always remember, it was a sad case it was. They just had the one little lad, he must have been about three or four or something like that. And I don't know what his wife was thinking about, but anyway, he had a bath of hot water, steaming hot water, somewhere in the passage up in the flat. And he had his little engine, pulling his little engine along. And he just went in this bath, and that was it. Scalded, because he died, of course. And that was the, never had any more kids, as I say. But that was him, the thought, I suppose his wife couldn't bring herself to even live in the flat.
Yeah.
And that's where he came, and he started, and he had that 70 detached houses built.
Right.
There, and that was the first one he lived in, that one there.
Okay.
And next one is a Miss Crow, but she used to own, she used to have the haberdashery shop down Grangier. She lives in there now. And then who else is there? Then the next place to that is a lovely bungalow, which the local joiner, well, they used to call him joiner and wheelwright and undertaker, Burton's, they lived at Clogger Beck there. You know which is Clogger Beck, don't you? And of course, where on the side of Clogger Beck there, there used to be sort of a shed with all the wood in and everything, you know, and saying he was the local undertaker. Well, when he was going to retire, before he had this stone-built bungalow, and everything he put in that bungalow, he had to be the best. Everything had to be oak, everything, the doors, everything, you know. Well, I don't know how long he lived in it, when he was in it, but anyway, one of our clerks at the post office, his wife, his daughter, she lives in it now with her, with her husband. He was a mechanic at, he was a diesel mechanic for that firm of these big cranes. Whenever you wanted a crane, you used to, they lived at Sandside there, this firm, I forget the name of it. And of course, he used to work nights permanently, and I think eventually got him down, you know, he ended up leaving. They live in that bungalow now. And then of course, you come further along, and there's a lass called Lucy. Oh, I forget what her name is. Her mother, she used to live with her mother. She used to live up Cartmel Fell, because I remember seeing her when I used to be on Bull and Bridge Round. And then the other ones, I can't remember who's in the other ones, except the ex-schoolmaster.
And where are you now exactly, Bob? You've lost me.
I'm at the last one along there, Arthwaite Road. And we turn round, and there's bungalows on the other side of the road. One of our postmen lived in the last one for a while. He's dead and gone now. He was a brother of the one I've just mentioned, Crow, from Amersfield Hall farm. And then he come out and went on Cark Road. And the first house was a proper house, a tall build house, because all those bungalows weren't there for a long time. They built them later on for old people's bungalows there on the corner. And that was a really wet corner. That was in there. They must have done that drainage as well. And then the first house on the hill was a maiden lady. I forget what her name was now. And then there was a Miss Deason. And then there was Holmeshausen. And then there was a fella I told you about who, his girlfriend from Meathup, Sergeant his name was, because I always remember him for the reason, if you ever met him anywhere, you see, there's characters, you never forget these characters. If you ever met him, his name was Joe Sergeant, and he was in his early 50s. And of course, if you met him, you'd say, "How are you doing today, Joe?" "Nay, as you see him," he used to say. You know, that was, they all used to get after him, name, and there was nothing wrong with them, damn sure there wasn't. Anyway, the next house that is Barnet, and then of course, after that they wouldn't allow him to build anymore because the ground starts to fall away there after that bungalow. And then you can come to the cottages there right in the corner. And there was, I used to remember when I was a lad, my mother and my auntie, my great aunt, used to do washing. I had a little bogey, which Pop made. I always called him Pop because he was my stepfather, you see. Never could call him Dad at all. And they used to put this on this bogey, and I used to go all the way down Cart Road to this Miss Suther's with this washing in a basket. I always remember going with it. And I always remember it saying one day, I don't know why, I suppose, whether I'd complained about the earache or something like that, but I know, I remember saying to me, you remember how things stick in your mind? She said, if you ever have earache, Robert, she used to say, she said, don't put cotton wool in your ear, she said. You know when you go around and you see wool that's been caught on hedges from sheep, he said, going through hedges and things like, get some of that wool, she said, and take it home to your mum and let her wash it, she said. And when it's washed and dried, she said, it's better than any cotton wool to put in your ears, she said, because it's more open. Not like cotton wool will stop your hearing. You can't hear through cotton wool, which is, cotton wool is sort of very close, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's funny, I said, I remember that woman saying that. And that's where Sticky Toffee from when first, when he got married, he lived in one of those little cottages.
Howard Jones,
yes.
Right.
Yes. Anyway, and then we came back there from there to the Headless Cross. Well, of course, his wife, Ownsworth Ernie, I've told you about, his wife, she came from there, Headless Cross, you see. And so it was always connected with Ownsworth, was Headless Cross. And the cross itself on the other side of the road, that little bit round it, I remember Pop building that when it was very first. When it first had a wall around it, they got him to build it and flag it in the inside because it gets knocked down with cars and whatnot, doesn't it? I think it's knocked down now, I think, hasn't it? Somebody must have done it, and they don't know who's done it, and of course they can't claim insurance because they don't know who's done it, I suppose. Mm. Which is a damn disgrace it is, isn't it?
Mm.
The only thing I remember, that the Brownies, when they were in Cartmel, they planted a rowan tree in it, didn't they? There's a nice rowan tree grows in it, I think.
There is, but I didn't know the Brownies planted it.
The Brownies had that, put that in there, yes. Anyway, then he came along, and there was a fella, he was actually, I remember him working in the shipyard. He was a joiner. I remember him coming off the boat when the buzzer used to blow. And then, of course, he came there, and he had two daughters, and he couldn't have been, he must have been really nice and off. I suppose he was one of, I always call a ruddy Freemason. And, because I used to have fun about that in the post office with Freemasons. They all used to pull my leg about them. But he had these two bungalows, and the two used to live separate. The two lasses lived separate. One works at Grangett. One was a nurse, her sister, she was in a hospital. And the other one, neither of them got married. The other one works for Wilson Robinson, the people who does the carpets and one another in Grangett, you know, on the machine doing curtains and all the rest of it. And then there's the house there, next to that, was on the side of the road, which was built in the orchard. That was a little orchard there then. And the family who lived in there was a well-known family called Dawsons, and they were quite a big family, they were. I always remember he used to be a really good bowler in the cricket, but the groundsman called Lesby, he was one of the men who was the labourer on the village hall when they built the village hall. And he ended up doing the grounds for the cricket club. And he used to play a hell about. They used to call him Ramsay MacDonald, Ramsay Donald, Ramsay Dawson, his name was. And when he used to bowl, he used to have a big long run. And you know when you run, and when you couldn't deliver the ball, you sort of stamp your foot there and you throw your arm over, don't you? Well, he used to be that hard that as he stamped his foot, every time he used to make a ruddy hole there where he used to dump it. Because I know Bertie said, he said, bloody nuisance is that Dawson. He might be a good bowler, but he doesn't have make me some bloody work, he used to say. He used to have to cut that bit out and re-put. And then, of course, they move. They don't go to the same place next time when they come.
No, they move it across.
Somewhere else. But
so keep on going down.
He used to play Hell About It. I can hear him playing Hell About It now for old Lazenby.
Keep on going down.
And anyway, after you leave there, there was Mason's Farm. I could never stick them out. That were real tight. I know the two lasses went to school with me. I know one was called Agnes. Later on, after their parents had died, she used to live tally with a lad, a chap who was married, who lived in the Flags.
And where are the Flags?
In the Flags. The Flags is where they have the, you know, where the archway goes through, where, you know, where they have the market?
Yes.
There, that place there where you can go through that archway down there, that's called the Flags. Did you not know that?
You mean down by the fish slabs?
No, nothing to do with the fish slabs, no.
Where are you?
You know where Wondrous have the... Wondrous, two lasses have the shop.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes.
And then you come along a bit and then there's that archway.
Yes,
there
is, yes.
Well, that's called the Flags down there.
Is it? Okay, yes. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and there's a little turn thing which you go through, haven't you? Well, that's where they... You said they live there. Anyway... You did that, and then you came round into the village, and you'd lived down there and all around the village, round Devonshire Square. The funny thing about Devonshire Square, down, you know where the shop is, don't you? Well, people used to have to pay sixpence to go into the priory, and then the verger used to take you round and describe everything around there. It's all it cost you for sixpence in those days. Well, that place down there, there's a gate there, it's called Priory Close down there. Now, there used to be, on the left-hand side, after you got through the gate, it was a big house, that, and there was two ladies lived there, two sisters, and we used to call them, one was called, she used to have her feet like that as she walked, used to call her 11:15, they did, you know, the local lads, of course, you know. And the other one, but they were very, very nice, very, very, they were upper class folk anyway. To give you an idea what upper class they were, their brother came through once. That was the first and only time I've ever seen one. And he was a bishop. He was a bishop of Peterborough. And he was in his full garb, three-quarter black coat, knee pants up to his knees with ribbons, long black stockings, black polished shoes with big bright buckles on, it was, and that was he must have been Bishop Blagden, I suppose, because these two were his sisters. That was the only time I've ever seen a bishop.
So is that the surname? What was their surname?
Blagden. Blagden, yeah.
Blagdon.
Something like that it was. But they were very nice people, and used to work very hard for the church and all the rest of it. They were that type of people, you know. Now, I mean, lads were ignorant, as you say. I mean, you know what lads are like, don't you? And they always had a servant, and they didn't seem to be able to keep them either. They had different young lasses come, you know, and of course the lads used to be going aye-aye to the lasses, you know, when they come, and the lasses maybe only came for a fortnight or 3 weeks, and possibly came from Barrow, you know, the town. I mean, imagine going from Barrow to a place like that, Cartmel Village, with no lights in Cartmel in those days, you know.
No street lights,
not a light anywhere. See,
but there were lights in the houses, surely.
No, only oil lamps.
Well, exactly when are you now, Bob?
Well, you see, what happened, Meatham Sanatorium was in full blow then. There was two sanatoriums there, and they had their own powerhouse and everything, but they wanted to be onto the mains. And so, you see, there's the women's section and the men's section. One was called the home, and that was the women's section. And anyway... So there's a firm came from London called Johnson and Phillips, and the sign on their wagons was like a J like that, and the top of the J was just a bar across the top, see? So it was Johnson and Phillips, you see, like it made a J and a P, you see, it did. And you know what kind of wagons they had? Ford T's. Now, you remember the old Ford Ts, don't you?
Well, it's a bit before my time, but I've heard
that's a hell of a long while ago. And do you know those Ford Ts used to take two poles on a, on the wagon? They were that, and they even went on Amsfell, those Ford Ts, with two poles on. I mean, it just shows how strong they were, those little Ford Ts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, up that lane there with the golf course, and up there we would go. Well, what happened was, when I first came to Cartmel, Pop, as I called him, he was out of work. This is 1926-27. He was out of work, he didn't have a job. And what happened, because he'd been in the 1914-18 war, you see, and he got two holes in his back. One, he could put your fist in one with shrapnel. He's put amongst the dead men, he was, and he happened to moan. An officer saw him and said, "Get that man inside to CCS, otherwise you'd have been buried alive."
What's CCS?
Coventry Clearing Station.
Right.
And so, of course, as I say, he was out of work, and anyway, when this came along, this firm, Johnson Phillips, so they engaged the local men that wanted as labourers. And what they did, they brought the power line across Ulverston Viaduct and across that green there. And have you ever been down to Old Park? Do you know where the cave is?
Yeah, I do.
Well, the line passes right over the top of there.
Right.
We came from Ulverston Viaduct over there, right away through Orca there, over Halborough, down into Cartmel, over Hampshire, and then right down again and right away through to Meathop, onto Meathop. That was the power line, and that's how Cartmel got the electricity.
And about when would that be, Bob?
Well, it would be somewhere about 1930, I think, somewhere about that, 1928, 29, there. And of course, he was just digging holes, helping to put these poles in, you see, for the power. I think it was somewhere about 360 volts, 360,000 volts, or something like that it was, the line then.
But we started talking about this because you said these lasses who would come from Barrow to be the servants for the ladies, the Blagdons, they would find it surprising that there was no electric light in
the village. Yeah, that's what I mean. Well, it was, everything was in darkness, you see.
But this was in the 50s, wasn't it?
Oh, no. This is a way back in 1930s.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were only around as a postman still.
No, well, I see, well, got to Blagdon's, and of course I was telling you about that.
Okay, so this is going back.
The square there, yeah.
So what else was in Devonshire Square at that time, when you were doing your rounds?
They used to have a shop, and he used to go the full length of there then. They used to have toys and everything like that. And there's two old dears came in the corner, they opened a cafe, and they didn't want people to go in there. What they used to say, you know, we've come here because we enjoy Cartmel and looking at the Priory. They didn't want people to go into the cafe. I remember they were called, they called it Bay Tree Cafe. I always remember. And then, of course, the other side of the road was the Institute. And then next to the Institute was a little haberdashery shop. And then next to that was Bluebell House.
And is that this photograph that you've got here for me?
Yes.
Tell me a bit about Bluebell House.
Well, Bluebell House, of course, it's 16th century it is. And when my mum sold it, do you know how much she got for it? £3,000.
And when was that, Bob?
I couldn't tell you. Quite a long while ago.
But your mother was alive.
Oh, yeah.
At the time, right. And were you living there then?
Oh, no, I was married, no.
Right,
no,
okay.
I was living at Grange then.
And just tell me exactly which house this is. Is this where the restaurant is now? Rogan's?
The Rogan, the cars are all parked. It's all boarded, the windows are all boarded up. You can't see into it. You see, next to that, my uncle, what he did, he made the little coach house, as I called it, into a little cottage for himself with nice red tile flag floors, you see. And of course, in the back, there was a big yard where they was used to make their own beer, you see, brew their own beer. And so he split that off with these concrete blocks, you know, but he only made them so high, about 10 foot high or something like that. And so there was a yard for him for there and a yard for Bluebell, you see. But there was also a cellar as well. But when the Beck used to flood, the water used to come up the pipes and flood the cellar as well. It used to come up in the cellar, it did. See, well, that's where they used to have the barrels in there.
So is Bluebell House on the corner next to the Beck?
No. After the little courthouse, as I say, there was this, he had it made in cottage. Well, that fellow from the from the Elkhorn, what do you call him? He bought the whole lot. He bought Bluebell out, and I believe he even bought next door as well. But I've heard since that he's been trying to sell the what used to be the haberdashery shop. Mind you, later on the Dawson family lived in there. Well, Dawson's I mentioned, you know. But anyway, the next to that there was a nice little grocery shop, which is a wine bar now. You see, it was a nice. There was. Miss, what was her name now? Was it Harry? No. Miss Carter, I think it was. No, wasn't Carter. I've forgotten now what her name was.
Bob, sorry, I interrupted you before, but before you go on, Bluebell House.
Yeah.
Did it used to be a pub, did he say?
It was a pub, yeah.
And they closed the pub and just made it into a private house,
yeah,
did they?
Yeah. Well, when he bought it, when my mother bought that off, when she bought it off me, we were living the other side of the road at E Court, we were renting that. And, of course, he was getting on, of course, and his wife was still alive. And she got it off him for £600.
Do you remember how long it had been since it had been a pub?
No idea, no idea.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
And then he, of course, and he come to some agreement to live in the front room as a bed-sit, did my uncle, who owned it, you see.
And this picture that we've got here, who are the people in the photograph?
Well, one's my mother. I don't know who the hell that other one is. I've no idea. That's my ma there, that one there.
That's your mum in the background,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's some seats outside as well, isn't there?
There's a bench.
I know, she had two benches made as well.
So you were living there when, Bob? Just trying to put a date on this photograph.
No, I wasn't.
No, you weren't living there because you were married.
When I came back out of the army, when I came home, I came home with a Lancaster bomber I told you about, quickly. Took me 6 months to get out there, and I came home on the same day, 9 o'clock in the morning, and I was here in England at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I got a pass for the railway, and I came back and I got to Lancaster, and there used to be two stations at Lancaster in those days. And you could only get as far as one, and you had to go to the other one to come up this line here. And of course, what happened when I was at Lancaster, of course, I got up there, and when I went to the other one, it had closed down, it was empty. And I remember walking away, and I had all my full gear on and everything.
Anyway, back to Bluebell House. So that was where your mum was living at the time?
No, she was living in Ecourt.
Which is E Court?
That's the one, the other side of the road.
Opposite this?
Yes.
Right, okay.
And so what happened, you see, what I'm trying to tell you, get to that part, what happened was that when I got off there, on this road, this sergeant pulled up in a wagon, on his push bike, and he said, "Where do you think you're going, young fella?" he said. I said, "Well," I said, "I'm trying to get to Grange." I said, "No trains," I said. Well, he said, "I'm going to visit one of my men, he said, policeman, he said, on the other side of Kirk's, Skirton Bridge, I think they call it. That's where everything had to go with that bridge then in those days. There wasn't the motorway then. He said, "When I get over there," he said, "I'll tell him to fit you up with one of the wagons that come over. Stop one of the wagons," he said. I said, "Oh, thank you very much." And away he went. Well, of course, I walked on and over the bridge, and the policeman was there. And he said, are you the young fellow just seen my side? And I said, "Yeah." He said, he'd asked me if I'd stop a wagon. So the next wagon that come along, he put his hand up and stopped it. And he said to the lorry driver, long distance lorry driver, "Where are you going?" He says, "Glasgow." Because everything went through Kendal then, you see. And he said, why? He said, "This young fellow wants a lift. He's trying to get to Grange." "Oh." "Well," he said, "I'm dropping him at Levensbridge," he said. So I said, "Oh, smash him." So I got in and he dropped me in Levensbridge. Well, it's a really good walk from there that night. I tell you, it was midnight and after it was, and I know I set off walking from Levensbridge. And I got nearly to where the petrol station is. It was called Bear Cafe then, that was. It used to be a great big bear stood outside. And there was a Land Rover passed me on that. The only thing that passed me would be a bloody fabric, of course, I guess. And I thumbed him and he just went right straight past me. I thought, "You rotten sod, you know. Call him all the names with a sod." And of course, it was a good way from there, even there, to Grange, then over the top to Cartmel.
Yeah, they did walk that night.
When I got to Cartmel, I know old fella got up in the morning at 4:30 and that made himself breakfast, and then he used to go to the post office, you see. He was on the post office. And so when I got there, I tell you, it was about 3:30 or something like that, 3:45 in the morning. So I thought, oh, not disturbing. So I just plumped down there on the porch with my bloody kit bag and just curled up. It was summer. When, of course, when he opened the door to go to work, there I was. 4.5 bloody years since he'd seen me. And of course, away he went. He couldn't sort of wait and talk to me. And of course, I went in, and it was, then my mama heard me, and of course, come down, that was it. And of course, it was while I was there that she bought Bluebell House, you see. And that's when I was there and I moved over there.
Right, okay, yeah. Okay. So, after Bluebell House, keep going on your round, Bob, just for a few more minutes, the and then we'll call it a day.
I went up the square and I got on about Howard Johns. He had the pub, the King's Arms, and of course they came along and said, "Oh, you can't take any more visitors in." So of course Howard Wood said, "Well," he said, "you're taking me living away from me," which they were. I mean, because he had rooms to let as well, and so of course he thought, "What the hell with this? I'm going to move out," and so he did it. He applied for the post office. You see, it was up for sale then, I think. You see, well, that was the post office for donkey's years. That time, you see, it was always the post office. And of course, while he was there, he started all his business with the Christmas trees outside, you know.
No.
They've got a hole in the ground by the window just outside there where they can stick a Christmas tree in.
Yeah.
And then there's another one goes over where the pillars are, you know. The other pillars in the corner there.
Yes.
There's one that goes up there, and then they put one up by the Royal Oak, I think. Don't they? I think they put one up there. They always have a nice display, don't they?
At Christmas time.
Well,
yeah.
He was the one who started it, was Howard, you know. But the only thing was, he thought he could rule the roost. And when he got there, he said to the post office, he said that he wanted more money. Because that post office at Carmel used to be one of the best post offices in this area as regards the wage they got from it. There must have been a lot of pensioners and things like that, you see. In fact, they used to employ somebody separately from the rest just to manage the post office. Always had somebody separately to look after the post office side. And when they were always a bit slack, they would give a hand with the grocery side as well, because it was a really busy. You could buy anything in that shop. You could buy a snare to snare a rabbit. You could buy a halter to put on the horse. You could buy fresh ground coffee when you went in. It smelled beautiful. I know hanging behind the door there used to be a great big old iron poker, which you had in on these open fireplaces. I suppose that was the thing if ever they were, you know, stopped with any burglars. Because, I mean, there wasn't burglars around in those days like there is now.
No.
And,
so
what happened was Howard said, "I want more money," you see. And so they said, "Well, I'm sorry, you can't have any more money." So he said, "Well, to hell, will you take your bloody post office out of here?" And so they took the box out and everything, you see.
Where did it go to?
And it went down Cavendish Street in a little corner in a place that was like a really stable, it was.
That was what, the post box or the post office?
The post office itself.
Oh, right. Yeah. On the right then, as you go down Cavendish Street, just before Longclume, that's where the post office was.
It was there, yes.
Yeah.
Because it was way down to the back there.
So what else was in...
And then after that, of course, when the woman who was running it retired... Nobody else wanted it, and so it went to Spar at the town end now, didn't it? That's where it is now, isn't it?
It is now. So stay in the square for a minute. You've got the King's Arms,
yeah,
and the Royal Oak.
Yeah.
What else was in the square?
And the funny thing about it was later on, they went and put an iron, a proper iron staircase on the end of the King's Arms. A fire escape, you see, a proper iron one, which that was what it wanted, you see. And of course, then after they could take people in.
Right, see? Yeah, okay. So.
And then next to that is the Ford House.
Yeah, what was that at the time?
Well, that was always a Ford House. There was people, big, big family lived there.
Do you know the name?
Called Bells. They,
Bell?
Yeah, Bell. A really nice family they were. And then next to that was the Royal Oak. The earliest people I remember living there, I think I told you about it, was two sisters who used to run it. And they, I always remember, You see, in those days, there wasn't even any fridges, you see, because you have, for a fridge, you've got to have a electric to have a fridge, haven't you? People used to have what you call meat safes.
Okay, but you're back before the war now again, aren't you? You're going
no,
back...
Aye?
Well, you're back before electricity came to the village,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah.
And you said electricity came...
Later on, yes, a lot later on. Anyway...
No, sorry, Bob, just to ask you again. About when did the electricity come to the village?
Maybe about 1934, somewhere about that. Somewhere about that, I think. You see?
Yeah.
Because I was going to tell you, you see, but you didn't want to know all about the troops coming, the Territorial Army...
We do want to know, but...
See, and also about when they put the sewerage in and things like that, and what they came across and things like that.
It's so difficult to keep you focused, though, isn't it? Because you've got so many good memories. I'll tell you what we'll do. Because the battery's about to run out on me now, we'll stop for today, and I'll come back again another time and we'll continue.
Yeah.
And I'll remember where we are. We're in the Royal Oak at the moment.
Yeah.
And when I come back next time, we'll continue
What happened was at the Royal Oak, and then, of course, later further, next to Royal Oak was a man called Benson, who was a tailor, a proper tailor, who mended, sitting there, you know, with his needle and that. And then next to that was the local district bank, you see. And then there's a little alleyway there which you can go through, and there's houses down there. And then there's a little shop there where the pillars are. You see, that used to be a cigarettes, tobacco and sweet shop, we see there. And then the big house next to that would belong to Holker. And then on the other side of the road, by the King's Arms, there was... El Coombe has got that as a coffee shop now. Well, you see, that used to be... confectioner's shop that did, and a cafe upstairs, and people called Brown had their own bakehouse as well. And then there's the Priory Hotel, the people called Davies who run that. And then of course next to that is the big place which has been made into three flats.
Well, and you've got the bookshop, the little bookshop on the corner, haven't you?
I mean the house, the whole building is three flats there. It used to belong to a lady who was very religious, who lived out at Stonydale at Field Broad. Do you know where Stonydale is? Well, it's a big house. You know, I put in stone then.
No, I don't.
Well, when you go up that road, as if you're going to go to Lindale, you see.
Yeah.
And you get to the crossroads.
Yeah.
The crossroads, you go straight on and takes you up to Newton. If you go to the right, it takes you up to the motorway. You go to the left, it takes you into Field Broad. Well, while you're at that, well, that's egg put in stone there in that wall, because it was what you used to say when you could hear the church bells, or the bells ringing, the stone turns and all the rest of it. It was all legend. Well, when you're at that, you can see a big house in the fields across there. That's Stonydale there.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay. So, Bob, let's leave it there for now, because we've run out
of... She owned that house, as I say, and we used to go in it from Band of Hope, and...
Band of Hope?
Band of Hope, yeah. And they used to give slides for all relating to drink, you see, your Band of Hope. And, of course, we used to like to get all of these little frogs you get in Christmas crackers where you go, you're nipping in, goes click-clock, you know. And, of course, the man that was operating the thing, you see, and the man that was doing the lecture was at the front, you see, with his... stick. I mean, now they have a torch which shine a light onto it now. But then they used to have a billiard cue and point, you see, these different things. And they were in colour, of course, but stills. And of course, we used to, when you got going, of course, we used to go click, click where the things are. And the fellow would move the thing, say, no, no, not yet, put it back. And it was us that were doing it, you see. And of course, what happened was, when they went round with the box, the collection box, and you put money in, well, we didn't have any money, we used to put acorns.
I'm stopping it now, Bob, or we'll be here all day.
That's it.